Mail call!
It's a Mailbag Monday with the Killer Bees.
You've got mail.
Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. It is our Mailbag Monday. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want to ask. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. 8022 wants to know, I need Blanker's take on Jalen Hurts' performance last night against his Packers. Is he a believer that he can lead a team to success?
So he handled the ball off enough and ran the ball enough that they gained 325 yards on a horse bleep defense that can't stop the run. I keep telling you that I'm impressed with his athleticism. He is an NFL player. And I will change my narrative and I will say I was wrong if in the playoffs he beats good teams. And he does it by throwing the football as well as running the football. I said he was in part the reason why they lost to the Buccaneers in a winnable game in the playoffs a year ago. That narrative doesn't change until he gets to the playoffs again and does it against good teams. If he does it, I will change my opinion.
Joel gets asked about this basically every week.
Good Lord.
Yeah.
If Jalen Hurts struggles early in the playoffs, if they have an early exit, Joel's going to have quite the celebration.
Yeah, I got receipts, pals.
I have a hot take about the Eagles' offense. And this is going to sound mean, but it's not. They run a high school offense. The Eagles run a high school offense, especially in the state of Texas. They sit back and mostly shotgun. They spread you out, which lightens the box. They run against the lightened box, and they have a lot of RPO elements with Jalen Hurts running the football a lot. This isn't a mean thing to say, and it's not a bad thing to say. They've simplified that offense to a very high school look because you can run the ball really effectively out of it. Jalen Hurts also excels in that type of offense. A lot of RPOs, a lot of spread. It's basically every high school in the state of Texas.
What did Collinsworth call it last night? Was RPR, run pass or run again? I mean, it was basically two different run options and a pass option, and just play it off the defense and let Hurts dictate it.
Yeah.
Look, if it works for him, then that's great. But the fact is that, again, people want me to change a narrative that was set with the performance in the playoffs a year ago. You don't change that. It's just like teams that are great regular season and can't win in the playoffs. Well, if they have another great regular season, am I supposed to change the fact that that's going to change their playoffs? No, I'll change it in the playoffs. If he craps the bed, believe me, I've got receipts. But if he doesn't and he plays well and he's the reason why they're winning football games, at least in part, I will wholeheartedly admit I was wrong.
713-780-ESPN. What are your questions for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. 1970 says spring or purified water and why?
This goes back to a conversation we had an hour ago.
I'll take the spring water. I'll take the spring water. That's a little more all natural, I think. That's my why.
This has gotten to be to the point of hallway conversation Lance and I were just having during the last break, too, where I told him that the studies show that the carbonated water or sparkling water still gets the same hydration. He called BS. I've always felt that way, but I always prefer, I don't want the fuzzy bubbles, and I don't feel like I get the same kind of refreshment as I do with just natural spring water, and that's why I prefer it.
I like the burn of the sparkling water, but this isn't really the sparkling water. This is spring or purified. Give me the spring. 713-780-ESPN. Your questions for the Killer Bees are Mailbag Monday, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Javier, you're in the hive with the Killer Bees. What's your question?
Hey, guys. This is about the Texans. So I've just been thinking, I know a lot of people are talking about who we're going to get as a quarterback, but, do we really want to put another guy kind of in Deshaun's place to where he's running for his life all day long? Or should we pick maybe another offensive line and maybe finally shore up the Texans problem for years? Because that's been the problem for years. They've never had a good offensive line because you see that with Brady right now. You see with Aaron Rodgers. That you don't have a great offensive line to protect your quarterback, they can't do what they need to do. Thanks.
Appreciate the call, Javier. Look, if you follow me on Twitter, which you should, at Jeremy Branham, I had a mock draft today where I'm just mocking mock drafts, and I drafted nothing but offensive linemen for the Houston Texans today, saying they need to shore up their offensive line for Davis Mills and Kyle Allen. Obviously, I was kidding about this. People took me seriously. It was hilarious. That said, I don't think that the offensive line really would be an issue for a franchise quarterback. We can have the conversation, I'm sure we will, over the next few days, whether or not taking a quarterback's in the best interest of the Texans. Do you rule out trading down, that sort of thing? I think that the offensive line one is better than people think, quite frankly, because I think Laremy Tunsil's been really good this year. Tytus Howard's been pretty good. Kenyon Green has a lot of room to grow. There's a lot of ceiling left for Kenyon Green. Hasn't really developed like we would have liked. Doesn't look as good as some of the other interior offensive linemen that were drafted later in the first round. He was the first interior offensive lineman drafted in the first round. But center and right guard need upgrades. Yep. You don't need to do that in the first round. You might not even need to do that in the first couple of rounds. You can do it in free agency and later in the draft.
I saw Ari Alexander on Channel 2 say that Bijan Robinson's a first round draft pick. Do you think he is?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. I think somebody will draft him in the first round.
I think that
it wouldn't be me.
I wouldn't be me either. That's my point. If you're drafting smartly and wisely, especially the way running back and the perception of running backs and their effectiveness in this league, and they become more of a dime a dozen than a must-have that you've got to get in the first round. And I think that, you know, if you're drafting correctly, if you believe he's a first-round talent, go get someone in the second or third or fourth round that could be just as effective. Uh-huh. I wouldn't go that high with a guy like that with all the needs you have to fill with the Texans.
I'd rather have Roschon Johnson than Bijan Robinson. Like, and saying that on the surface is like, what? Throw this guy off the radio. But one's going to cost you, in the Texans, probably pick number 32, first pick of the second round, whereas Johnson would cost you a third, a fourth. Give me that guy instead of the guy that I'm using the number 32 pick on. I'm sorry.
And then you get to what the caller said. The more important thing is if you've got the right guys blocking and the right schemes in place, most guys can run behind a good offensive line and get you yardage, and he could be the next guy in line, whoever you pick, later in the draft than wasting a first on a Bijan Robinson.
I don't think the offensive line's that far off. I think we need to see improvement in Kenyon Green, upgrades in center and right guard. And then obviously...
I think they need a go-to receiver.
Scheme is very important too. Yeah, go-to receiver would help. But I don't think if you draft Bryce Young at number one, I'm not scared that this offensive line's going to get him destroyed and killed. In fact, some of the advanced numbers on it show you that the offensive line's actually been pretty good at giving the quarterbacks time at throwing the ball. Now, the last couple of weeks have been a bit of an exception. 713-780-ESPN. What's your question for the Killer Bees? 713-780-3776. Tone says, which do y'all prefer, a real or fake Christmas tree? I'm thinking of going with a real one this year.
I've always gone with for the most part, when I was little, we always had real ones.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was a point in time as my parents got older that they went to the convenience of an artificial tree. But ever since I've been on my own, from single to that now married with kids, we go real tree. It's something about the smell in the house, of the pine smell and the feel of it and everything like that, that I've always been a real tree guy.
Yeah. As a kid, we had the real trees. I like those. We did the frosting on them, too, or looked like snow. Yeah, I thought that was pretty cool as a kid in Houston that never saw snow. Now as I've grown up, though, and I'm all about the interest of survival, I don't want a real tree to catch on fire. So, fake tree. Give me the fake tree. Lower maintenance. Yeah, but I'm not always home. I'm scared that it's not going to get watered. I'm scared of a fire. The interest of survival and the interest of low maintenance, I'm a fake tree guy.
I don't know about that one.
Sorry. I am.
It might be a weird take. I prefer fake trees.
Why is that?
Sometimes when things are fake, they look better. You have the ability to perfect how they look. Okay. I just think it's cleaner. True.
Give me the fake tea.
Clean and easy.
Do you have your tree delivered by Uber too?
Me?
Uber Eats? Or...
I have never had a Christmas tree since I moved out of my parents.
Oh, well, bah humbug to you too, sir. Scroogey.
Degenerate on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975. Jordan Love or Davis Mills? Who would you take?
Jordan Love, because we don't know completely who he is, and I think I do, but and I'm not Chris Collinsworth, because Chris Collinsworth was ready to basically fluff him to the moon and back last night. Every throw was this awesome, incredible throw. They were wide open guys that he was throwing to for the most part. He even said, what a great throw that was. They saw the replay and went, oh, I guess it was a little behind him. It wasn't as perfect as I said it was. Stop already wanting again, the fascination with this whole thing because of Aaron Rodgers and replacing him, it goes too far too quickly. He's not a guaranteed franchise quarterback, not a guaranteed starter in this league. But at least you could find out. You already can. You don't know who he could be. You know who Davis Mills is.
Yeah. Jordan Love showed a little bit of flashes last night. I know it was a very small sample size. Some of those flashes, I was like, okay. All right, Jordan Love. I wouldn't mind seeing a little bit more of you, Jordan Love.
Well, you're going to next week.
Yeah, I liked what I saw. Like, very small sample, but I liked what I saw out of Jordan Love. If I had to take one of those two right now, give me Jordan Love. Absolutely. Right. More talent and there's more unknown. Exactly. Whereas there's a lot more known about Davis Mills. 713-780-ESPN, Mailbag Monday. Ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. Ocho is simply having a wonderful Christmas time. The worst Christmas carol ever.
Oh, that's a Christmas carol? That's more of a jingle or a jam?
I couldn't tell you. I don't even know what that song is.
Oh, my God. It kind of sounds like the Beatles a little bit, but it's simply having a wonderful Christmas time.
Well, that's not so bad.
I don't know that I could pick a bad one. This is all great.
I couldn't tell you the name of one Christmas carol song. Couldn't.
Silent
is
Night.
Jingle Bells a
Silent
Christmas carol?
Silent Night is kind of, it sounds depressing. Just the tone of it seems kind of slow and depressing.
Rudolph a Red-Nosed Reindeer, is that a Christmas carol?
Yeah, it's a jolly one.
I'm realizing as we're talking here that I want to start listening to Christmas music. It's officially time to start
I was
that.
About to ask y'all.
No,
that.
It is not.
Yeah,
y'all
it's
listen
time.
To Christmas music.
No, it's not.
When is it? When's time?
December 1st.
We're there.
I've always felt like after Thanksgiving, it was fine. I'm not a huge Christmas music kind of guy. Like maybe
the stations
the week.
That go 24/7 yeah. Christmas music starting like right after Halloween.
We're going Christmas bumps all day tomorrow.
I might. Oh, that's awful. You're not going to be here.
You're
that's
not going to be here. So
it's empty threat there, Brendan. I'll listen to it like when the family wants to listen to it. I'll listen to it maybe like the week. Not even the week. Maybe like Christmas Eve. Maybe the 23rd to the 25th is whenever I'll listen to it when I'm by myself in the car. I don't dislike it, but I just rather listen to other stuff.
I don't want to hear, except for right around the week of Christmas, I don't need to hear all the you already see Christmas stuff blowing up in department stores in October.
Yeah.
It's too much too soon.
0282, is Damian Pierce fraudulent? Bad 2 weeks, very
no.
bad.
No.
Sound like Trump there a little bit. Bad 2 weeks, very yeah, bad. Very
well,
bad.
When you know how bad the quarterback is, you can focus more on stopping the run and stopping the Texans. And it's not that hard to stop the Texans anyway.
Should have traded Damian Pierce at the deadline.
Oh, shut up.
Should have traded him at the deadline. If you could have gotten a first rounder for Damian Pierce, why wouldn't you have done that? If you believe that you don't draft running backs in the first round, why wouldn't you trade a running back for a first rounder?
There's no one in the league, general manager wise, that's going to give you a first for a running back.
Bill O'Brien, is he somewhere?
He's in Alabama.
So no? No, Damian Pierce is not fraudulent. The defenses are loading up against the Texans front five. They're loading up the box. They don't believe that Kyle Allen can beat them. They don't believe that Davis Mills can beat them. So they're not going to let Damian Pierce beat them. It's lack of offensive prowess for the Texans. It's not a lack of Damian Pierce being good at football. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Speaking of the Texans, it feels like the season had been going perfectly, right? Embrace the suck. Texans are losing week in, week out. They're cruising to the number one pick. But a few concerns along the way that have kind of changed that perspective for the Texans. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
So it felt like going throughout this season that things are going perfectly for Embrace the Suck, right? You're losing all these games. You're going to have the number one pick. Everything's looking just fine. But you've started to see some things along the way, Blankers, that have become more dysfunctional with the Houston Texans. You pointed to Lovie Smith kind of cracking to the media not once but twice, 2 weeks in a row that Lovie Smith has done that. The issue that I have isn't so much that they're losing, because it's fine. Like, we want the Texans to have the top pick. I think if you're honest with where the organization's at, that it's a rebuild, you're going to lose games. Like, we're not having these conversations with the Rockets, although the Rockets have won back-to-back games. Like, losing is one thing. But being dysfunctional is another thing. When you're trying to block one of the best pass rushers on the other team with your tight end, that's bad. Whenever Brandon Cooks, who I know Brandon Cooks isn't pleased being a Houston Texan, but Brandon Cooks isn't also going to lie on a microphone and say that, you know, that the offense is horrendous. They basically said they weren't prepared to play. He basically said the offense was not prepared to play in that game yesterday, which, look, it was 30-0 at the half, and we're not wanting the Texans to win, but when you start to see dysfunction on top of dysfunction, on top of dysfunction, it's a bad place to be.
It really is. It's one thing for us to warn you before the season even started about Davis Mills, about this roster, about the fact that the good thing was to watch the development of the guys that they drafted and understand there's tons of more draft capital coming in the next 2-3 years that can help this team. but this team is not worthy of being helped enough to be the playoff team that a lot of people wanted it to be. All those things are fine and dandy and are part of being a fan. But what you have to be concerned about is the walls crumbling around you now with the reactions you're seeing. You're seeing what you talked about in terms of players in the locker room like Cooks telling you how it really is, how depressing it can be, how players are feeling this, and it sucks. But then you're seeing your head coach two consecutive weeks lash out at the media, showing the fact that the armor is starting to break, that he is not keeping his solid, strong, stick-with-the-company line. We know what's going on inside these four walls. Your perception is different because you're just watching it from the outside, looking in, and just moving on. When you're being affected by it, reacting to it, and lashing out because of it, that's another sign that all is not well on Kirby, and that there might be, if it continues, there might be more of a pressing need, no matter how bad the look and the optics are, to make another change with the head coach. But specifically, if you're going to go quarterback in the draft with an offensive coordinator you know is going to be with new quarterback for the next couple of years, the foreseeable future, so they can develop together an offense, a rhythm, a playbook, all those things.
The fact that they don't seem to have a plan, too, is something that I was picking up on throughout the season, but didn't know if it was like really a big deal. I remember the Lovie Smith, whenever he joined Barstool for some reason to do an interview, and he was talking about what he like values from his defense. He even said that the corner position he had as his fifth most important defensive position. And then Nick Caserio drafts a corner with the number three pick in the NFL draft. That to me doesn't really seem like there's a plan where you have a GM that values the corner enough to select him number three, which is higher than a lot of people would take a corner. But then the head coach, one, values it at the fifth most importance from a positional standpoint for defense. And then he's going to play cover two, more zone than anybody else in the NFL. It doesn't seem like there's a plan or alignment there between the two. You can even look at what the Texans are doing offensively, where it's like, we don't even know who's going to play quarterback. Where Lovie Smith says on Wednesday, we don't know who's playing quarterback. And then you have Pep Hamilton, even after the reports came out, saying that there hasn't been a change. It doesn't feel like there's a plan for the Houston Texans. So, like, I don't mind the losing. You're in a rebuild. That's why we said embrace the suck. Buckle up. The rebuild's going to take a while. And hopefully the Texans get the rebuild right. Nick Caserio can build it up like Jeff Luno did. You know, that's a pipe dream, but you're hopeful for that. You're expecting to lose in a rebuild. The problem that I think most of the people in this city have that are hoping that the Texans figure it out is that they see dysfunction. They don't see a plan between GM and head coach.
And it's also the way you're losing again now. You lose
30-0, that's going to stick in your craw.
Yeah, definitely. Again, the way you lose has the impact as well, because I had even talked about part of embrace the suck is you're competitive for three quarters. The Rockets did a hell of a job of it a year ago, and then you find a way to lose, whether it's intentional or not, is something that we're not supposed to know, but it can happen. But I think the other thing is, and you know, the same way we gave Brian T. Smith credit a week ago for not backing down from Lovie Smith with intimidation and sticking to what he was trying to get accomplished with the answer of a question. I think you give credit to Randy McAvoy. Last night, Randy McAvoy noticed what I had kind of thought about, but until he actually said it, I was like, you know what? Oh, he's right. The architect of said plan that we don't know what it is anymore has disappeared. Nick Caserio's not doing media anymore. Nick Caserio's not doing the kind of things that he had been out there week after week out there when the development...
He was on last week. He was on their morning show.
Was he on the Highway to Hell?
Yeah.
I hadn't seen him.
He was getting criticized because he was talking about... he said that family is more important than football, and you should be thankful for that more than football on Thanksgiving. People
Randy
are crushing
said that he was passing on his media. We'll see if he does it this week. And like his media availability with all of the media, not doing his... I'm sure contractually he has to do the GM show with the flagship. I don't know.
I haven't... I mean, the only time that he's really done media was... The last time that he's done media, like a presser, was post-trade deadline, I think.
Again,
but I mean, he's not. No other GM really does, though.
But I think that when you're talking about a guy that he's talked about with Davis Mills a lot and trying to see what they have and putting him out there, and then when the change is made, you want to hear from more than Lovie. You want to know, and you also want to know from both sides. Just like when he would say something, Cully would say something, they would go back and forth, they would give their opinions. I would be interested, and I'd want to hear from the general manager as well as the head coach. What went into this decision? Were you guys in unison? Are you good with it? Are you good with the fact that whether it's Lovie's decision or if Lovie would say, hey, it's Nick's decision or we made this decision together? I want to hear both sides of that. And we're not hearing anything from Nick Caserio suddenly, and I want to hear more because I want to hear the plan that we may be missing. so that maybe I'm misspeaking in the fact that I think things are going backwards, not forwards now. As much as I liked his draft, I liked the young players they brought in, I saw the ability to get behind these guys and see their development as part of the foundation of this team rebuild.
I don't know if that's Nick, though. Like, Nick can only build the roster to a certain point, right? Like, he can only collect the talent. He can only bring in the talent. He can't develop the talent. He's the GM. Like, that's why you hire a coaching staff to develop the talent. You can't.
But if you're bringing in the veterans, if you're bringing in the extra things to fortify and bring in the complementary pieces to the kids you drafted and the people that you think you have in place, It's on multiple shoulders, right?
Do you think this roster is better than last year's roster?
I think it is.
I do, too. So, I mean, you can make the case. And, look, I'm not sitting here banging on the table for Nick Caserio, because I think Nick Caserio, in a lot of ways, has been overrated a little bit to this point. And this might be from the Nick Caserio guy on this show. I'm not advocating at all for Caserio, but his roster is slightly better than it was a year ago. It's still the worst roster in the NFL, so it's not like we're celebrating or anything here. The problem is that you've seen a lot of regression from players, yep. Whether it's Davis Mills, whether it's Kenyon Green. Derek Stingley hasn't been on the field right now, so it's kind of incomplete. You're not talking as highly about Jalen Petrie as much as you were talking about Jalen Petrie early in the year. John Grenard's been hurt, so there's another injury. But even John Grenard, before he got hurt, had a disappointing few games where they're counting on the veterans like Jerry Hughes and things like that. I think that there's a lot of problems across the board. That's why it's more than like the losing. It's like looking at the whole foundation. It's looking at the big picture.
Well, there's many a butts under the microscope, right? Not just one. You can share it. Everybody needs to own up to it, and I think there's plenty of people to blame for this.
Sure. I don't know how much blame you could put for Caserio midseason. You could give Caserio a lot of blame for draft picks, building the roster. It's a rebuild, so you expect to lose along the way. But from kickoff of the 2022 season to the end of the 2022 season, I mean, GM's not really doing a whole lot.
Well, you don't know, right?
To that year's roster.
Because like a year ago, he was doing a ton. He was on the headsets. He was involved in basically telling Cully what to say, even when he didn't say what he was supposed to say. And we caught the dysfunction along the lines of how much over general managering he was doing by getting involved in. He had his hand in every cookie jar.
I mean, that was more like game day management stuff. That was like, should we be going for it on 4th-and-1? That's not grooming your left guard.
But no, but I understand he's not coaching them. But he was on the practice field. He was on the practice field a lot. He was all over the place.
GMs usually are, though. GMs are usually on the practice field talking to their coaches before games, watching practice, things like that.
The more people you heard from.
He wasn't assigning drills.
No, but the more people you heard from, the more it seemed like he was more than most other general managers would be involved in the day-to-day.
Sure. And like even if that's true, he's not player development. He's not developing your guard and your corner and your safety.
These guys aren't exactly getting coached up because we started the show with that. I believe that they got to do a better job of coaching these guys on a daily basis too. But I think that we don't know how much it's changed from Cully's regime to Lovey's. We got the idea from early on that these guys were going to communicate a lot better. They were going to be on the same page a lot more. But I'd like to know, and I'd like to hear from both parties in terms of decisions like a Davis Mills benching and other things that are going on, how much it's one guy versus the other, if not both.
7744, I mean, isn't he responsible for hiring the coach, which is who would be responsible for midseason issues? I want to discuss that. Also, I want to get to some of the sound that Lovey had to say yesterday. All of the thoughts that he had, I think, speak to what you said a little bit, Blankers, about how you had a head coach cracking with the media yesterday. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, tell you again about my good friend Doc Linville. Doc Linville's a game changer. He's a game changer because for all the guys out there that are losing their hair and believe there's nothing you can do about it but shave it or go to those foams and creams and all the different sprays that can try and make you look and be deceptively giving the appearance that you have hair again, this is actually your own hair, and it's a great procedure. It's called neografting. He's the best in the business, in my opinion. He does it right here in Houston, Texas. And essentially, it's taking your hair where you have a lot of it or you're never going to lose it, like the sides and the back, and locating it where you need it most. Sometimes it's that baboon's butt that pops its evil, shiny self in the back of your head or your 8 head instead of a 4 head where you need a change in your hairline. They can do those things. They do it on a daily basis. They did it for me. They can do it for you, too. And the procedure, to me, was painless. And it was easy. And the fact is the results are there. And they tell you that the hair that they're going to move and locate to where you need it most, it's going to stay, it's going to grow, it's going to be with you for the rest of your life. The fact is 95%+ of the follicles move, stay, and grow, and are a part of your hair for the rest of your existence. It's phenomenal. And I need you to check it out because you can inquire about it, ask all the questions about it, get all the information about it for free. As an ESPN listener, you get what most people pay $150 for just by going to 975hair.com. Set up an appointment, meet with Linville and his staff, and find out what I found out, that this procedure was right for me and it's a game changer. Check them out right now. Again, 975hair.com. Set up a free consultation. Ask all the questions. Find out all the answers and find out if it's right for you. It was right for me, and I could not be happier with the NeoGraft procedure. Check them out today, 975hair.com.
All teams covered. No talking points necessary. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
7837 says, I bet I can get the Wheelhouse to give her a shout-out. Screw y'all. Y'all suck. The Killer Bees suck. I didn't even see a shout-out.
Shout-out for who? 7837.
I didn't even see anything. So
I didn't see it either, but now I have no interest in doing it. So go ahead and...
Screw y'all. Y'all suck.
Killer House Bees your
suck.
Wheels.
Embrace the suck with Killer Bees. 713-780-ESPN. 713-780-3776. Real quick, before we get back to Lovey and what he had to say yesterday, Brandon T., who do you think had the most influence in getting the Abreu deal done? Jim Crane.
I agree.
Crane was clearly.
It's a splashy deal. It's a sexy deal. It's not just one of those click-type moves that is going to not move the needle much for the general public, but is going to make your team better. This is one of those that has Crane written all over it, in my opinion, as well.
Yeah, I think Crane did, for sure. All right, so anyways, the Texans have been losing. There's no surprise that the Texans are losing. Like, maybe for some, there shouldn't be. We know that the Texans are in a rebuild. Whenever you're in a rebuild, you lose games. Houston should also know what a rebuild is like. Like, we've lived through rebuilds, whether it was with the Astros, whether it's with the Rockets now, whether it's currently with the Houston Texans. So in rebuilds, you lose games. Part of the frustration for me, though, is you start to see the dysfunction. You don't really see a plan. Lovey and Caserio, I don't think that they're beefing. I think they're fine. Like, I don't think that they're disagreeing with anything. But Nick Caserio, how he views a team and the importance of certain positions are obviously very different than how Lovey Smith views teams and how what positions he thinks are important. It's not a great marriage between the two, just because they aren't aligned. And I know that we hate to use that word aligned whenever we talk about the Houston Texans, because that was Brian Gaines' thing and that was Bill O'Brien's thing. 7744, I mean, isn't he, Caserio, responsible for hiring the coach, which is who would be responsible for midseason issues? If you think that Nick Caserio is the one who hired Lovey Smith, then I have some oceanfront property in Arizona that I want to sell to you. Nick Caserio had zero influence in the hiring of Lovey Smith to be the head coach of the Houston Texans.
I don't know that I'd say go as low as zero, but I think that they had no, they basically, that was a reactionary move across the organization and based on circumstances beyond their control that was going on around them on a daily basis and in the media and circling. And we all know that Brian Flores' situation and all that, it changed everything in a blink of an eye. And therefore, they just went with the quickest, easiest, best way that they could distance themselves from the lawsuit and the distraction and everything that was going on with Brian Flores and find themselves at least a guy with experience to coach their football team. So whether it was zero or less than zero or a little bit more than zero, but basically that was a move almost essentially made for them and with the easiest out being someone that already worked for them.
We had the finalist list for the Houston Texans. The final three were Brian Flores, Josh McCown, Jonathan Gannon. I think it was going to be Jonathan Gannon. People were reporting that it was going to be Josh McCown. People thought that Brian Flores was just a symbolic name in the finalist. But then they hired Lovey Smith after a Sunday supper. Cal McNair is the one who hired Lovey Smith to be the head coach of the Houston Texans. Nick Caserio, I know he's the GM. I know he's responsible at the end of the day, but he had zero influence on the hiring of Lovey.
You don't think Jack being neck side by side by Cal going, look, I know I love McCown, but this is the move we got to make for now.
Maybe.
Cal listened
to
Jack.
That's not Nick.
There wasn't, no, I'm saying, to your point, it wasn't Nick, but Cal listened to Jack on a pretty much daily basis for quite a while.
They stripped his power a long time ago, though. I don't believe Easterby had
power and discussions are a different story.
Sure.
I mean, I think they talked.
I don't think it matters, though. You know what I'm saying? Like, could it be true? Sure. I just don't understand why it matters.
I don't know that you have to pin it on anybody except for the fact that why it matters when it relates to Caserio is the fact that this would be, whether you like it or not or believe it's fair or not, he's going to be shouldered with, if they get rid of Lovey Smith, firing two coaches each after a year,
he
and he will take 100% of the blame. Whether it's how much he had in involvement is a totally different number, it doesn't matter. The public is going to crucify him and say he is the guy that hired and fired two coaches after 1 year successively. And, oh, by the way, they were both African-American, which is going to matter more.
Yeah. The perception of it is that that is the perception of it, and that is going to be the story. You're right. Lovie Smith yesterday, the second head coach in 2 years for the Houston Texans, had some interesting things to say in the press conference. First, how about the moral victory Monday for Lovie Smith about how his team played in the second half?
Games like today, when you're down 30-0 at the half, you have to look for positives. And could have gone, of course, two different ways in the second half. And I like the way the guys fought in the second half. Couldn't let them score anymore. I don't think they scored in the second half. And offensively, we're able to get a little bit going in the passing game. Protection was better. Made better throws. Caught the ball better. Never really got the running game going. And I thought we had a chance.
There you go. Lovie Smith, Moral Victory Monday. Part of me hates this soundbite from Lovie. Most of me hates this soundbite from Lovie. Oh, we did strong in the second half when you were down 30-0. How was the rest of the play, Mr. Lincoln? The other part was that he's being instructed to talk positives with this team.
No doubt.
It's David
no
Culley question. Last year, where you know we're bad.
Spin cycle.
Spin cycle, be positive. Lovie Smith this year, from the moment he took over the job, positive, positive, positive. Why? Because that is the mandate. That is the instruction. We know your team is lousy, so we have to be as positive as we can. That's why David Culley was hired. David Culley was hired because they thought he could be the most positive for a very bad team in a very bad situation. Part of me feels bad for Lovie. Part of me just doesn't want to hear him talk about how good they were in the second half when they trailed 30-0 at the half.
Yeah, no one wants to hear that. Anybody try and, like, if the sky's blue and you tell me it's purple, no one wants to hear that. Everybody saw the first half. Everybody saw the whole game. Everybody saw you get just absolutely, completely bum-rushed and crushed for the entire duration of a football game. If you want to pick and choose positives, that's what, as a football coach, you're trying to do to try and uplift your players to get ready for next week. But don't bring that BS in the media room, and don't bring that BS to the fan base and tell them that, you know, the sky is blue or the sky is purple when the sky is blue. Stop doing that, because people and the fans and the people that follow this team are too smart for that.
Yeah, it's true. Here's the other thing about Lovie. Now, this is the interesting question here, because Lovie talks about getting a job and how when you get a job in the NFL, it's not ready to win right away, which is kind of fascinating that Lovie's thinking long-term with this organization.
Most times you don't come in when you're ready to win right away. You start building, and that's what we're doing. We're building. And eventually we're going to get it done. Right now, it's kind of easy to take shots at us because we're not quite there. So we'll take that. But eventually we'll get over hump.
So that the question that I have is, like, is that's where you think you hope the Houston Texans are, this rebuilding phase. Eventually they'll get back to being a winning organization. What's fascinating about this soundbite, though, is because, look, I think the Texans will be a playoff team again someday. I think that they, at some point in the history of football, will get back to being in the playoffs and the postseason. I've never allowed myself or have asked myself the question, is Lovie Smith the head coach of the Texans when that day comes? And Lovie Smith is here kind of forecasting that I'm going to turn it around.
Yeah, and it's, again, coach speak is a lot of what we just got done talking about. Coach speak is trying to find positives when you want to talk about chicken salad, when the whole world saw chicken bleep, right? And the other part of this is trying to, again, just the same way he's trying to get you, if he says something, what comes out of my mouth should be what you believe, and trying to convince the media and the fan base of that, he's also doing it from the perspective of, if I start acting and believing and talking and speaking on the fact that I'm going to be the head coach of this team for the next 3 to 5 years, I want you all to believe it too, because speak it into an existence. And then all of a sudden, it will be. And you can believe that till you're blue in the face, but that ain't happening. And I think everybody, again, that's smart enough to realize this team played like dog snot yesterday is the same people that believe Lovie Smith's not going to be the head coach of this team for the next 3 to 5 years. He'll be lucky if he survives this one and gets another one. So he can speak it all he wants. There's no way that that's happening.
Here's Lovie with the Brooks Kabina yesterday. Got upset, got mad with Brooksy.
Let's have somebody else. We can turn this into you and me forever. Let's let someone else ask a couple questions, and then we'll come back to you. How about that? We'll get you. We're not going to leave until you. Let's let everybody else, and we'll come back to you. All right? And, Jonathan, I can figure out who I want to answer to. I don't need your help with that.
I don't know what Jonathan did to get on Lovey's bad side, but Brooks was asking some stupid questions. He really was. He was asking the same thing like three or four different ways. What? Why did you see positives in the second half? They benched all their guys. What do you mean there was positives in the second half, et cetera, et cetera? I can understand why Lovey got mad. The thing is, Lovey went right back to him the next question. Like, he allowed one person to ask a question, then he went right back to Brooks Kabina. But Lovey showing cracks for the second time in 2 weeks.
Look, and that's the sign, like I said, of a coach that's feeling the pressure, that's succumbing to the pressure because of the fact that he's breaking down at a press conference when all you basically have to do is turn the other cheek and just go, I answered that once, I'm done with it. But to handle it the way he did and then kind of look for it. He wanted to go back to him to see if he had something that he could say that he could get on even more. That's a guy that's feeling too much of the outside pressure and the forces that be with it that he shouldn't be feeling.
713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. We have the important question next. Something that everybody likes to discuss. Everybody wants to know, when you're on a plane, which Odell Beckham wasn't on one for long, do you recline your seat on a flight? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Informed opinions are always presented here. You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I had a buddy yesterday who was flying back into town. He was griping that the guy in front of him reclined his seat during the taxi after they landed to the gate, which...
After they landed, the flight's already over?
Yeah, I mean, on the taxi, from landing to the gate, which, I mean, it's a weird time to recline. I can understand that.
Yeah, it is.
But it's also a weird time to gripe about the recline. Like, what are you trying to do in that 15, 20-minute taxi that is you're being prevented from doing because the guy in front of you is reclining? Like, I felt it was an interesting gripe.
I'd be pissed if I was on a three-hour flight and he did it for all 3 hours as opposed to once we landed. Yeah, I'm a little agitated that I'm trying to get up and get my carry-on and get ready to go. But, yeah, the fact that it's just between landing and getting to the gate, I'm like, that's not a big deal.
And then I asked him, too. I was like, that's kind of an interesting gripe. What about, like, the plane ride? Like, what about the trip that you're in the air? He's like, I don't mind that. Like, what? That seems kind of backwards here. But it does beg the question, because I don't think we've talked about this. Apparently, the Blitz used to talk about it.
This was a big issue for the Blitz.
Do you recline your seat on a flight?
I normally do, but I normally, unless I look behind me first, And a lot of times I'll give the courtesy question of, do you mind if I recline this? The only problem is when you ask if they say yes, I still want to recline it a little bit. Yeah. I might not go as far.
The question's kind of irrelevant, I feel like, here. Like, that's got to be a you call. Like, if you're going to ask the question and then you recline a little bit, that's kind of a D move.
I've never reclined on a plane once. Never once.
What?
I've done it a few times. Now, I feel like there's some rules in place. Whenever you're on a normal plane, commercial plane, like outside, like first class, it doesn't matter because you have plenty of space. Right. Or like the times that I have done it, first class, or like charters before. Well, I got bumped to first class. What? I didn't pay for it. Okay. Trust me there. I'm too cheap for that. But like a charter too. Like sometimes charters that, I mean, you've been on the Rockets charters. Yeah. They have huge spaces.
We got a ton of space. When I was traveling charter, you could pretty much lay on the floor. Lay on three seats, whatever.
So those are like, obviously, you're not impairing anybody's space. You can recline on those. But whenever I fly commercial, I never recline, period. Like, I if there's somebody behind me, I will not recline out of respect to the person behind me.
That's a 3 or 4 hour flight. I'm sorry, but I can't say that I've never done it, and I can't say that I wouldn't do it again just because I don't want to completely impede them by going all the way back, but I will recline it a little bit.
Yeah, I'm anti-recline because I don't want to be disrespectful to the person behind me.
I think I lean on the side. Like, I don't want to be aggressive about it because it exists, right? Like, the airlines give you an option to do it. But I get annoyed if someone in front of me does it instantly.
Oh, I do too.
I'm more annoyed by parent behind me, but a seat over, allowing kid directly behind me to kick my seat for the flight. And no matter how much you look at the parent or, he's like, unless, even when you say something and they just let their kid run roughshod kicking the back of my chair for a flight, that's more likely to piss me off than if someone reclines in front of me, because I can recline too.
4503, no reclining in coach. End of discussion. I tend to agree. tend to agree. I feel like you're being rude if you do recline. And then like you, like Brendan said too, like if somebody did it in front of you, I'm annoyed. Because like sometimes I'm working. Like if I have my laptop up and you recline, then all of a sudden my, you know, my laptop gets banged or I'm trying to, you know, put something on the tray table there and it gets knocked off.
So I this is maybe a weird comparison, but when I go to sporting events, I'm always very like cautious with standing up. Like, are the people in front of me standing up? Yeah. I usually won't be the one to like start the standing up, but if somebody stands up in front of me, I have no hesitation about it. With planes, it's not like that though. Like if the person in front of me reclines, I still feel like it's wrong for me to recline.
Same. Absolutely. It's, I don't think it's as, like, it's not as easy, I think, as like the, you're in the stands, somebody in front of you standing up, so you now stand up. Because, like, somebody behind you can also see somebody standing up in front of you.
Right.
The recline, they can't, see the recline. Oh, this person's reclining because somebody else is reclining.
It's about perception. You're afraid to look like a bad guy more than be the bad guy.
I don't think it, no. I wouldn't say
that's
kind of
like when you're driving and the guy in the fast lane has a bigger vehicle and is only going 55 and you don't know if there's a car in front of them slowing them down or not. You got to kind of...
Yeah, look around.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a pretty good comp. 1970, I always try to sit in the Economy Plus or First Class. Nice flex there, 1970.
Well, you did flex the First Class yourself.
I did. I don't really feel bad about saying that. 1970 also says, I'm 6'2". If you recline on me, you'll get a knee in your back. But I don't think that you feel that as much. Like, you feel the knee in the back, but if you recline up to the knee, then, like, that's your position.
It's the level of the knee, right? It's the aggressiveness level.
Yeah.
Like, if you just kind of put force in the knee, you're not going to really feel that all that much. And actually, it might be more of a support factor that you go, oh, that feels a little better. Like, it's like my car seat that I can adjust the back pressure. But if you, like, aggressively, like, knee kick the back of the seat a few times, I think you could send the message clearly that you're not a fan of what they're doing.
7777, good number, appears to be on your side. It reclines for a reason. What about the armrest? Armrest rules are simple. If you have a three-seat row, mm-hmm. then the middle gets both armrests. And if you're
you
on
get the outside or inside.
Yeah, exactly. If you're the window, you get the window armrest. If you're on the aisle, you get the aisle armrest. But the person in the middle, because they have the lesser of the three seats, they get both armrests. One pet peeve that I do, well, I have a couple, I have a lot. But the two biggest pet peeves that I have, one of them's pretty popular. Like, whenever the plane lands and they're deboarding the plane and people in the back like are rushing to the front, go one row at a time. Go from start to end. There's no, like, you don't need to be rushing past other rows.
Yeah.
Go row by row by row by row.
It is annoying to me that people try to do the quick out to try and beat everybody that's well in front of you and in their appropriate rows to get out. Unless they've got a connecting flight, in which case you should have talked to the stewardess and they should have said, hey, before we deboard the plane, we've got a couple people trying to catch flights. Let's let them get through first.
Yeah.
Then I'm cool with it.
Absolutely. The second one that I have, that this one's a little bit kind of, I don't think people know this one as much, is whenever you get up from an aisle, like, or not from an aisle, you get up from your seat and, you know, planes are kind of congested. Mm-hmm. You're trying to find a way to not fall down. Don't grab the back of somebody's seat as your armrest to go to the bathroom. You're yanking down on somebody else. Like, you're sitting, let's just say, in row 33, and you're getting up, and you just, you know, put all your weight on seat 32 right in front of you.
Oh, to get,
on
your, get way your to, ass
yeah,
out of the chair?
Use the top of the plane. Don't use somebody else's seat.
Yeah, that's a little bit.
People always use seats as a way to kind of their armrest, their handrail.
I thought you meant, like, if they're going down the aisle and lose their balance.
What are you even grabbing that, on the top of the plane?
Yeah, I'm
the luggage carrier. There's little
one.
Handles on top that allow you to keep your balance.
Those little handles are to open and close the doors, are they not?
No, they're to keep, like, notice a flight attendant when they walk up and down the rows, their hands are always
there. If you're in on the aisle seat, but if you're sitting anywhere else,
you could pressure. I don't think there's anything to grab. It's like
no,
a handle.
There's like a little itty bitty rail that you can put your hand there.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't believe this.
I don't know. I've never. I'd have to pay
on
more
the aisle.
Look
seats.
At a flight attendant. Yeah,
on the aisle seats,
no,
I can see.
I'm talking
it.
About the middle of the craft in the aisle.
But so if you're getting up on a window seat, that's not an option.
But don't use the person's seat. Now, it's not an option, but don't use the person's seat.
What
figure
if you
out a way.
Can't
figure
get up
out
without
a way.
That.
Be an athlete. Be an athlete and figure out a way without grabbing somebody else's seat. It's rude.
I think what you're basically saying is don't be a fat ass because you can't get out of the chair without assistance.
Athlete. Your way, whatever. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Andrew, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees. What's up, Andrew?
Andrew! All right. So
the phones aren't working?
We probably covered what Andrew wanted to get to.
There's no telling. Andrew could have said literally anything. He could have added some good incitement. He could have had a really good point. Who knows what Andrew is going to say? Because Andrew couldn't be potted up.
What about the people, like, when you're going to the bathroom? when you got to go to the bathroom on a plane.
Sure, that's fine. I mean, if you have to go to the bathroom, you have to go to the bathroom.
Right, but if there's a line or if there's someone already in said bathroom, are you okay, like, if they're waiting?
Congregating, hanging out.
And hanging out towards the back?
I feel like they don't have a choice, because if you go sit in your seat, there's no telling how long you're going to be waiting.
You have a choice if you have an aisle seat, because you can just go back conveniently and get back into your seat.
Thanks, Andrew.
You don't if you're in because you don't want to.
Somebody could jump the line. You see what I'm saying? Like, if you're seven seats away from the bathroom, you're like, oh, you know what? I'm not going to congregate the galley. I'm not going to sit in the aisle. I don't want to clog up space. And then all of a sudden, three people walk back there. Now you're screwed. Now you're fourth in line.
Well, now you're going to wet your pants and be pissed off.
I think both things can be true. Yeah. Both things can be true.
I just don't like the congregating when, because then the people, then you talk about leaning on the tops of chairs and then kind of half leaning on and using, like, to keep you upright while you're waiting in the aisle, that you lean on someone the back of their chair. That's worse than, like, someone that uses the top of your chair to get up from their seat.
Mm.
Like, if the seats are occupied right next to the aisles leading up to the bathroom, and someone decides, while I'm waiting, I'm just going to lean right here between these two seats. I don't think that's cool.
It is an awkward moment. I just don't know if there's any avoiding it. Because, like I said, you could lose three spots in line. Because somebody, like, if you're courteous in that situation, somebody else isn't going to be.
True.
So, like,
that's true.
You're going to lose a couple of spots in line, and, you know, that's a dangerous place to be. 8998. Branham, are you saying Wilhouse Jake that Nick should be fired because he should not have the ability to hire a third coach? That was not Brad Kellner. Look, GM shouldn't normally have three head coach hires. I don't think that Casario's had three head coach hires because he didn't hire Lovey. He was supposed to hire somebody else. Here, I do want to see Cal McNair do this, though, with Nick Casario. I want to see Cal give Casario the Bill O'Brien treatment. And by that, I mean, at one point, Bill O'Brien wanted all the power, and Cal McNair said, okay, well, here's all the power. And then all that power, Bill O'Brien got himself fired because he didn't know how to use that power.
Yep.
Cal needs to say, okay, Nick, Easterby's gone. Any perceived power there is gone. I'm not going to interfere in any more head coach hires. This is your last one. This is your chance to right the ship. I'm getting out of the way. But any sort of regression or any sort of embarrassments, even more than they currently are, well, you wrote your own check.
Should have already been to that point. Yeah, but if you have to, because he had gotten a six-year deal, if that's the way you've got to handle it so that you can truly either pass or fail Nick Casario and either move on or move forward, then so be it.
Yeah.
Before we get out of here, by the way, I don't like your method of doing this, Chris and Beaumont, but because of the fact that your girlfriend Donna passed away, rest in peace to Donna, and we'll give her a shout-out, but next time there's a different way to do it, but RIP Donna.
Really hope there's not a next time. Brendan, thanks for doing that.
But if you want a shout out on something, I mean, there's a different method to doing it than if we don't do it in 5 minutes, biting our heads off.
That's it for us. Thanks to Brendan for doing all the hard work. He's Blank. I'm Branham. Jake's invading our show again with his ugly face.
Doing his animal.
That's going to do it for us. The Wheelhouse is next on ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5. Talk to you tomorrow, Houston.